Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
On October 8, 2009, Bobby and Sherilyn Jameson, along with their six-year-old daughter Madison, set out to look at land for sale in the Sanboys Mountains of Oklahoma. Days later, their truck was found abandoned less than a mile from the property. Inside were their wallets, coats, a phone, $32,000 in cash, and their dog, who was barely alive. Despite an extensive search, there was no sign of the family for years. Then, in November of 2013, hunters discovered the partial skeletal remains of Bobby, Sherilyn, and Madison just a few miles from where their truck had been found. It's been nearly 12 years since then, and investigators are still searching for answers. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week, I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. And also, I'm going to add a little bit more here. Make sure that you're subscribed to those channels and make sure that you have your notifications on. That is something that I get a lot of. I'll release a new episode and people will say, hey, I wasn't notified. It sounds trivial, but a lot of the times these platforms will not only unsubscribe you, but they'll also turn off your notifications. So please take a second and make sure that your notifications are on for both platforms. I would greatly appreciate it. Before we get into the Jamesons, I want to give a quick update on another case that I covered, Trudy Appleby. Now, some of you have already DM'd me, emailed me, messaged me on Twitter, whatever it is, and let me know about this. And I had been following it, and I'm happy to report for anyone who doesn't know, there has been an arrest in the Trudy Appleby murder. Now, if you haven't listened to the episode, the individual who's been charged with her murder is Jameson Fisher. He's someone that I mentioned in the episode. He was the last living person of interest still around. We talked about some other subjects in that case that I think could also be connected. But now that we have a person in custody, I'm interested to find out why now. It's been almost 29 years, almost 30 years. So why did they finally go forward with this? I'm wondering if it was a grand jury hearing where they decided to indict him, or there's something new that we're unaware of that was discovered that linked him to the case. They already had him as a person of interest. They already knew he was connected somehow. So I really want to know what got them over the finish line. I also want to know if at this point they're going to drill down on Jameson and try to find out what else he knows. Was anybody else involved with what happened to Trudy? I know they're no longer with us, but I really want to hear about the other individuals that I mentioned in my episode to see if they had anything to do with this crime. If you haven't listened to the episode yet, I strongly recommend that you do so. I believe it's episode 72, if my memory serves me correctly. A couple of you had mentioned it. Go check out the episode. I'm sure there's going to be more updates. I'm probably going to do another update on this case as well as some other cases that we've covered. I'm going to save that for a future episode. I usually like to do update episodes one or two times a year. But this is why we do it, guys. This is why we put in the work. This is why we keep their names out there for people to consume and hear about their stories, because it puts pressure on the people who can actually do something about it. I actually retweeted a post from the Moline Police Department, the agency in charge of Trudy's case, and they said exactly what I'm saying to you now. You said her name, you told her story, you never gave up, you never allowed her to be forgotten. That's a key one. You stood by us and you stood up for her. Our fight continues until she's found. And this is exactly what we've been saying. We have to keep that pressure on not only the public officials in charge of those municipalities, but also the agencies in charge of the case to let them know, regardless of how much time has passed, we're never going to forget these people. We're going to keep talking about them until they get the justice they deserve. Trudy is just one of those many stories. And although this is a huge moment for us and a huge moment for her family, this is just one of many, and we got a lot more work to do. So keep it up. Keep up the fight. You're making the difference. Now, let's get to the Jameson family. Sometimes we talk about cases and there's a small suspect pool that could be involved. And even in other cases, we kind of know who did it, but we just can't understand why they haven't been charged. The Trudy Appleby case being one of those. But this one's different. This is a real mystery. So if you like those real true mysteries where you're going to leave the episode probably scratching your head, really trying to put the puzzle pieces together, you're going to have to speculate and talk about all these different theories. And trust me, there's a lot of them. This is going to be the case for you. You have three individuals who were brutally killed, in my opinion, but maybe you feel different. Maybe there's something else here that I'm missing, and I'm really looking forward to hearing your feedback on this case. And I do want to mention that there are a lot of blogs and threads that post about this case, but they often share information or theories that I didn't personally read in reputable article sources. So for the sake of just being factual and trying to keep it as foundational as we can, I did not cover those theories unless I found a reputable source. I got a lot to cover. Let's dive into this week's case. In or around 2007, Bobby and Sherilyn Jameson, along with their four-year-old daughter Madison, moved from Oklahoma City to a rural home in the Eufaula area of eastern Oklahoma. By the fall of 2009, 44-year-old Bobby and 40-year-old Sherilyn were looking for a fresh start for themselves, for their six-year-old daughter Madison, and for their beloved dog Macy. According to the Tulsa World, the family began searching for a large piece of land in the Sanboys Mountains near Red Oak, which was about 50 miles from Eufaula, and their plan was to take a large shipping container, which they would eventually convert to a home. On October 8th, the family was scheduled to look at a 40-acre piece of land for sale on a mountain, but after that day, they were never heard from again. Within days, their relatives became concerned and contacted the police. A search began, but nothing was found until October 17th, and on that day, the Jamesons' white four-door GMC pickup truck was found abandoned at a well site about a quarter of a mile from the property they were supposed to view on the 8th. Now, investigators would later learn that the well site was actually a second location that the family had been considering as well. According to the Oklahoman, when the truck was found, the doors were locked, the keys were in the ignition, and there were no signs of struggle or foul play. Now, inside was the family dog, Macy. She was starving, dehydrated, and barely clinging to life, and it was clear that she had been there for quite some time. And because I know I have a lot of animal lovers on this channel, trust me, I'm right there with you. Don't worry, Macy survived, and she went on to live with Bobby's mom, so you don't have to worry about that one. However, the Jamesons were nowhere to be found. And as I mentioned, when the truck was found, the doors were locked, and the keys were in the ignition. But eventually, they got inside. And when they did, investigators found a cell phone, coats, a wallet, a purse, and empty pill bottles for pain medication prescribed to Bobby. There was also about $32,000 in cash inside a bank bag tucked beneath the driver's seat. It was a little bit hidden, so it wasn't just out in the open. And according to BuzzFeed Unsolved, investigators looked into the phone and they learned that it had last been used on October 8th. It also contained a photo of Madison that investigators believed was taken that same day. Now, as far as we know, this was the last known photo ever taken of her. Now, the photo's up on the screen right now if you're watching on YouTube, and it's basically a photo of her with her arms crossed. She's looking off camera. It looks like there might be some woods behind her. And the family believes that this picture was not taken by her parents. They think this is because Madison looked scared, she had her arms crossed, and isn't looking at the camera. Now, I don't know Madison, and I don't know their family. Obviously, her family would know her better than me. But just seeing what I have in front of me, and if you're on YouTube right now, please let me know what you think in the comments. But I don't see anything out of the ordinary in this picture. I've taken a lot of photos of my daughters, and sometimes they're candid photos where I catch them looking off camera and they're in a funny pose, and it's unintentional. To me, I don't think she looks scared. I think she's like in the middle of a laugh, maybe making a funny pose or doing something. I don't know, but there's nothing that stands out to me. Does that mean anything in relative to this whole case? Not really. I still think it's important to know that this photo was taken on October 8th, because what it could suggest is that up until this point, everything was going okay, and that they were taking photos of their daughter in the middle of a funny moment. And that tells me that at least partially during that day, things were okay. They might have stopped to do some sightseeing, and maybe this represents a moment in time right before whatever happened. And as we get into some different theories and speculation, we are going to talk about murder-suicide. So if this is a happy moment for Madison, Bobby, and Sherilyn, does that rule out that possibility? Or is it possible that one parent was taking the photo and the other parent was going through something that nobody was aware of? We're going to talk about all of it. But again, that's my initial observations of the photo. I don't think too much can be derived from it. I'm by no means an expert on photo analysis, and I don't think anybody could look at this photo, and I don't care who you are, and tell me exactly what it means. We're all entitled to our opinions, and I'm looking forward to hearing yours. Based on what they had found so far, investigators believe that the family had planned to return to their truck, but for some reason, never did. Latimer County Sheriff Israel Beesham told the media, quote, "It seems like they just stepped outside of their vehicle and disappeared." Authorities intensified their search for the family, but the rugged terrain with mountains, timber, rocks, mud, dense underbrush, snakes, and hogs made it extremely difficult. And I remember seeing a video from Sheriff Beesham where he actually talked about what they had for resources. They had 13 canine teams, planes, UAVs, people on horseback. It was a full-scale search, and yet they didn't find anything. And Sheriff Beesham knew he needed more resources even than what he already had. So he brought in all the help he could, including 12 FBI agents, 3 Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation agents, and the Oklahoma Highway Patrol. And this physical search went on for months, with investigators also working to determine a timeline. One of the first people they spoke with was the landowner, and he said the family did visit him on the 8th, and according to him, they seemed like they were in good spirits, and after they left, he never saw them again, and he hadn't seen anyone else go up or down the mountain that day. No one else reported seeing or hearing from the Jamesons after their visit to the property. We have so much more to cover, including a video that displays some suspicious behavior, in my opinion. We're going to talk about it right after the break. Delete Me makes it easy, quick, and safe to remove your personal data online at a time when surveillance and data breaches are common enough to make everyone vulnerable. So what do data brokers actually do? Well, they can get your name, contact info, social security number, home address, even information about your family, and this could all be compiled by data brokers and sold online. That's right, it's exactly how it sounds. Data brokers make a profit off your data because data is a commodity. So anyone on the web can buy your private details, and this can lead to identity theft, phishing attempts, and harassment. But now you can protect your privacy with Delete Me. Listen, I said it last time we talked about Delete Me. I've been getting hammered with spam text messages and emails. They're definitely phishing attempts. And what's nerve-wracking for me is I'm a detective, and I'm almost being tripped up by it because they're getting more specific to what I do online and my personal details. So as a person who exists publicly, especially as someone who shares their opinion online, I'm hyper aware of safety and security, but maybe the normal person out there won't be, and they're more susceptible to these types of crimes. So if you've been a victim of identity theft, harassed online, or even doxxed, or maybe not you personally, but someone you know has been, Delete Me can definitely help. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. Now at a special discount for my listeners and viewers, you can get 20% off your Delete Me plan by texting DETECTIVE to 64000. That's 64000. The only way to get that 20% off is to text DETECTIVE to 64000. That's DETECTIVE to 64000. Message and data rates may apply. All right, we're back. And as part of this investigation, you have to look into the victims and their activity leading up to their disappearance. So investigators looked further into the Jamison family, hoping to learn more about their lives prior to October 8th. They found that in the months prior, the family had gone through a series of changes. Both Bobby and Sherilyn lost a significant amount of weight, and not long before they vanished, they pulled Madison out of school. The couple told people that they had planned to sue the school, but investigators could never determine why. Sherilyn's family had also noticed the changes. Her mom, Connie, said, quote, "Sherilyn was a very strong-willed person, but I saw her change dramatically. She became very illogical, and one day she drove me to Oklahoma City and dropped me off on the street. She told me to get out of the car, so I did." Connie explained to investigators that Bobby and Sherilyn were both disabled and did not work. Bobby had been injured in a car accident, which left him with back issues, which would explain why he had the prescription for pain medication. Police had never disclosed Sherilyn's disability to the public. However, Connie did tell the Oklahoman that Sherilyn had been diagnosed as bipolar and that she and Bobby both had depression. Connie went on to explain that at the time of the family's disappearance, Sherilyn had been struggling with depression for multiple reasons. Her sister had died in a freak accident after a bee stung her tongue, and her teenage son from a previous relationship had gone to live with his father. But these changes in Sherilyn and Bobby's behavior went far beyond mood shifts and depression. In the months before they went missing, Bobby and Sherilyn had been talking about being in a, quote, spiritual warfare. Sherilyn told their minister that there were, quote, 3 to 4 spirits in their house, including children named Michael and Emily, and that Madison often talked to Emily's sister, a spirit with wings. Sherilyn said that she wasn't afraid of the spirits, though, because she believed they had the gift to cast out demons. And when Bobby spoke to the minister, he asked if there were special bullets he could use to shoot the spirits. He also went on to say that he had been reading the Satanic Bible to find a natural way to fight them. When investigators searched the Jamison home, they found a book on witchcraft and a letter that dwelled on the spiritual realm of death. They also located the large shipping container that the family had planned to move into. Now, what was interesting about the shipping container is that there was graffiti painted on the outside, including one message that read, quote, "Three cats killed to date by people in this area. Witches don't like their black cat killed." At the house, investigators also discovered that the family had a security system. While reviewing the last available footage from October 8th, they saw the Jamisons acting oddly. Sheriff Beesham went on to describe them as having, quote, "trance-like motions." They walked back and forth between the house and truck dozens of times, moving items from the house to the truck and then back again, never speaking to each other. They changed clothes several times and would sometimes stop abruptly, stand still, and just stare off into the distance. Beesham said it was very strange, and I'm going to play the surveillance for you right now. You have it up on the screen if you're watching on YouTube. And, you know, I have to agree, looking at that footage, something is definitely off there. It doesn't seem normal to me. I did talk to a few people, one being Shannon, who's editing this episode. And she was like, it seems kind of normal to me. And, you know, maybe this was throughout the day. But to me, the light that where it's positioned in the video is relatively similar. So I think this all happened within the same amount of time. And yeah, when you're moving, you would think that there'd be some conversations between the two. But what was more disturbing to me was the fact that they were bringing items out to the truck and then back inside, and then out to the truck again, which I can't rationalize the irrational. That's not something I ever did. It's just a lot more work. I wonder if in their minds they were suspicious of someone or something seeing what they were doing, and they were trying to throw them off. Now, whether those people actually existed or they were just making it up in their heads, that's two different things. But yes, I concur with Beesham and everybody else who may feel the same that this video is something that stands out to me and something we have to consider when we talk about theories, because in my professional opinion, this is not normal behavior. But let me know what you think. And I do want to point out that at one point during the many trips between the house and the truck, Sherilyn placed a brown briefcase in the truck. And this detail immediately stood out because the briefcase wasn't there when the truck was found abandoned. To this day, the briefcase has never been located. Neither has a small caliber handgun the family was presumed to have with them at the time of their disappearance. Now, because the briefcase hasn't been found, we don't know what was inside, but Sheriff Beesham has publicly stated he believes it may have held a large amount of cash. All of this, the trance-like behavior, the weight loss, the sudden behavioral changes, and the $32,000 in cash, led investigators to wonder if the couple might have been involved in drugs. And I think this is a reasonable question. They may have been going through something because of what they were taking. And when you talk about large amounts of cash, as investigators, it's something we're always concerned about when we're looking at potential drug activity. So they don't even have to be using the product. They may just be distributing it or facilitating a transaction. And that can create paranoia because I can tell you firsthand, when you're dealing with high-powered drug distributors, if you mess around, if they get paranoid about you, they'll just take you out. They'll just kill you. So one potential explanation for the behavior that we see in that video is that they feel they're being watched by someone. That person could be the individual they're dealing the drugs for, or they could be paranoid about law enforcement. That's also something that I've seen firsthand many times where drug dealers or just people who are committing crimes will do what we like to call cleaning themselves off. So they'll bring something out, then bring it back in. If they're in a car, they'll make multiple loops around a specific location before going inside. This is to see if they trigger any type of behavior by someone who may be watching. So is that a possible explanation for what we're seeing in that video? Absolutely. However, when investigators searched the home, they didn't find any drugs or paraphernalia, which would point to the fact that they weren't actually using any product if they were distributing it. And friends and family said the couple didn't have a history of using drugs either. The only thing Bobby took was his prescription pain medication, which could leave him in a daze sometimes. In the end, investigators found no evidence to conclude that the Jamesons were drug users or drug dealers. Still, they didn't rule it out. Investigators kept digging into the Jamesons' history, and the more they learned, the more they believed that Bobby and Sherilyn had been scamming people. That theory comes directly from Sheriff Beesham, though he's never really explained why he thinks that. He only pointed to a series of lawsuits, including one from 2005 when the couple sued three people over the car accident that left Bobby disabled. And I don't really know where that leaves us. I would need more context of how they're scamming people, because with this one example, I think most people would agree. If you're in a car accident that leaves you disabled, you're well within your right to sue them. That may make more sense to me, but I would have to know all the specifics. And I will say, according to Bobby's mom, the lawsuit was settled out of court for $64,000, which could explain the cash found in the truck. But then the question becomes, where's the other 32 grand? And when we think about that brown briefcase, yes, it could have been drugs, but it also could have been the remaining money. So that was one lawsuit. And like I said, we don't have record of all the lawsuits, but I will say in May of 2009, Bobby filed a lawsuit against his 67-year-old father, Bobby Dean. And to avoid confusion, I'm going to call him Dean. I think that would be much easier. And the Oklahoman reported that the lawsuit centered on a dispute over ownership of a gas station Dean owned in Oklahoma City. Bobby claimed he was owed a percentage of the property for himself, and when he didn't receive it, he sued for more than $10,000. On top of filing the lawsuit, Bobby filed an order of protection against Dean. In the petition, he alleged that Dean had threatened to kill him and his family on at least two separate occasions, and Bobby didn't say exactly how those threats were made, but he did write that his father hit him with a vehicle on November 1st of 2008. And this wasn't part of the petition, but we also know that just 4 days before the November 1st incident, Dean made changes to his will, naming Madison as the sole beneficiary of his estate and cutting out Bobby completely. Now, it's unclear if the two events were related, but it's definitely worth noting. According to Bobby, his father became violent again during a second incident in April of 2009, And afterward, Bobby filed an order of protection, and in it, he described Dean as a, quote, very dangerous man who thinks he's above the law, and he claimed was involved with, quote, prostitutes, gangs, and meth. Bobby went on to write, quote, my entire family is severely scared for their lives. I am in fear at all times. But according to the Oklahoman, the protective order was dismissed after a judge heard the testimony. The lawsuit, however, remained active and was still pending when the family disappeared. After learning all of this, which I'm sure was a lot, the Latimer County Sheriff's Office looked into Dean as a possible suspect, but Dean's brother Jack told investigators he didn't believe Dean was involved. Jack said, quote, he was either in a hospital or in a rest home when the family disappeared. I just don't think he was involved. He was disturbed at the time, but I'm pretty sure he was not capable of being involved in that. Jack added that he had no theories about what had happened to the family, calling their disappearance a complete mystery that made no sense. Ultimately, investigators didn't believe Dean had anything to do with the case, and he was in such poor health that he actually died before the end of the year. By May of 2010, more than 6 months had passed, and there was still no sign of the Jamesons. Sheriff Beauchamp admitted that he had no idea what had happened, and he said every theory was still on the table. Connie, Sherilyn's mother, had her own theory. She told the Oklahoman, quote, I think someone killed them, and they're still up there in the mountains. She believed that there was, quote, no way that Bobby and Sherilyn would ever let anything happen to Madison unless something had been done to them. She later elaborated on her theory and said she believed that Sherilyn was on a hit list maintained by a religious cult operating in southeast Oklahoma. She didn't name the cult, and very little information about this theory has ever been made public. Bobby's mother, Starlet, also thought the family was dead, and she believed that they were killed after they saw something they weren't supposed to. For 3.5 more years, the investigation moved forward with no answers until November 2013, when there was a major break in the case, and we're going to talk about it right after this break. Shopping, planning, and cooking food really can be simple and stress-free. Imagine having your weekly shopping cart filled for you and your meals for the week decided on. Taking all the work off my plate is why I love Hungry Root so much. Hungry Root helps you eat well and reach your diet or health goals, whether that's gluten-free, dairy-free, high-protein, focused on gut health, or anything else. Just take a quick quiz, and their smart cart technology recommends groceries, recipes, and even supplements tailored to your taste and needs. It's like having a personal shopper and chef all in one, so you can spend less time planning and more time doing what you love. And with my offer, you'll get a free item like a premium protein, veggie, or sweet treat in every box for life. I've talked about Hungry Root's food a lot on this channel. I absolutely love it. I recently had their pesto baked salmon again. That's probably one of my favorites. Also, the game changer for me is when I travel. There's a lot of crappy food at the airport. I think we all know that. So I like to stock up on their sun butter and jelly dippers and also their beef sticks. Take them in my backpack, travel back and forth to LA. Definitely a game changer for me. And Hungry Root holds all of its food to high standards, screening out over 200 additives, including high fructose corn syrup, artificial sweeteners, and preservatives. They source only high-quality meat and seafood with no hormones or antibiotics. They offer organic produce and non-GMO options and carry trusted healthy brands like Oatly, Vital Farms, Ithaca Hummus, Harmless Harvest, and many more. So take advantage of this exclusive offer. For a limited time, you can get 40% off your first box, plus get a free item in every box for life. All you have to do is go to hungryroot.com/detective and use my code detective. That's hungryroot.com/detective, code detective, for 40% off your first box and a free item of your choice for life. One more time, hungryroot.com/detective, code detective. All right, we're back and we're going to talk about this major break, but I will say, it's news none of us wanted to hear. On November 16th, 2013, Tim Graham, his wife Shari, their daughter, and a nephew were hunting deer in the Sanboys Mountains about 3 miles from where the Jamesons family truck was found. The area was remote and densely wooded, with no paved roads for miles. But there was a path through the area that Tim and his family were following as they searched for deer. As they walked along the path, Tim came across 3 skulls. Now, these skulls were lying face down next to each other on the surface of the ground, but slightly sunk into the soil. One was large, one was a little smaller, and one was very small. And it's worth noting that the large skull had a hole in the back of the head. After making this discovery, the family left the area and called 911. And as you can imagine, given the location and the number of skulls located, authorities quickly suspected the Grahams had found the Jamesons. After investigators arrived, they began searching the area, but it was extremely challenging because by that point, animals had scattered the bones, leaving only partial skeletons for each victim. They did recover each skull, which is important, and for the adults, they also recovered some teeth along with arm and leg bones, but that was it. And that's really what you need for identification, right? You need to have these bones so you can make a DNA analysis and potentially link them back to whoever you think they might be. But in addition to these bones, shoes and pieces of clothing were also scattered nearby, but nothing that could help with immediate identification. So the remains and other evidence was sent off for testing, a process that would end up taking months. However, even without confirmation, many believe the remains belong to the Jamesons. Sherilyn's mother, Connie, said, quote, "I hope those remains are them. I know that sounds strange, but I need closure. All the people who've been affected by this need closure." And when I use that word hope, some of you are probably looking at me like I have three heads, but at a certain point, that's what it becomes. Hope to just find out what happened. And from there, it does create some new hope, right? Because if you are able to confirm that they are no longer with you, now you know that they're deceased, and the question is how. And once you determine the how, if there's any indication of foul play, now you can direct all your attention at the who. But you can't get there until you have the bodies. You can't get there until you know that answer first. And that's what this hope that I'm describing actually means. It's a start to the investigation that you didn't have before. Because with this answer becomes a rejuvenation in the case. Now detectives have a new piece of the puzzle to work with. So yeah, I understand what she means by the statement. I don't take anything negative out of it. I think it makes a lot of sense. Going through life every day, not knowing if they're still out there somewhere in need of help, I can break most people. So having that quote unquote closure, as she described it, makes a lot of sense. So fast forward to July 3rd, 2014, the remains were officially confirmed to be the Jamieson family. However, their cause and manner of death could not be determined due to the extent of decomposition, incomplete skeletons, and animal damage. And this is something we face a lot. We eventually find the bodies, but you can't really determine a cause or manner of death. And I was talking with Shannon about this, and she said, well, what about the hole in the back of the head? Well, without having a complete skeleton, a complete skull, that hole could be due to the elements. It could be due to the animal activity where that skull over time was chewed through. I don't want to be crass here, but that's a real explanation. And without having the complete skulls of the other two victims, you can't really come to a conclusion. If we had three complete skulls and all three of them had a hole in the back of the head, I think it would be easy for all of us to come to the conclusion that they were executed. But not having that and not being able to rule out the possibility that this hole in the back of the larger skull wasn't due to just being out in the environment for that period of time, it's not reasonable for the pathologist to say definitively, yeah, that's a gunshot hole. And if they did their job and they searched the area well, you would think that maybe you would find a shell casing unless it was a revolver that was used. And we do know that the gun that the family potentially had with them was a small caliber weapon, but I couldn't find any information anywhere to determine whether it was a pistol or a revolver. That doesn't mean that if someone else was involved, they didn't have their own gun, which opens up a whole new series of questions. But without having any ballistics at the crime scene, and again, the lack of skeletal remains, it's difficult to get to that point where you can say, yeah, there's no doubt about it, these three people were killed. But even without a clear answer on how the family died, many did believe that the family had been murdered. Sheriff Beesham, who had left the force before the remains were found, told Crime Watch Daily he thought it was a homicide. And as I mentioned very early on in the episode, murder-suicide had been floated as a theory, but he said it didn't make much sense. Bobby wouldn't have been able to walk 3 miles from the truck to where the remains were found, and no weapon was located at the scene. And I completely agree with him here. If it was a murder-suicide, and let's just say for the sake of this scenario, Bobby shoots Sherilyn and then shoots Madison and then shoots himself, well, there would be a gun right next to his body. The only explanation you could have is that someone else had found them before Tim did, and these people were the biggest scumbags on the planet, stole their belongings, stole the gun, and left the three bodies there. Is it possible? Of course it is. Do I think it's likely? No, I don't. And if they did do that, I mean, they're just pieces of you know what, but I don't think that's what happened here. It doesn't look like the area had been ransacked before Tim found them. The fact that there was no gun found at the scene really puts a dent in the whole murder-suicide theory, even though I acknowledge that a lot of the behavior prior to this incident does suggest some suspicious behavior, which could lead to something like this. I think it's a coincidence. I think two things can be true. I think they could have been going through something mentally and also be the victims of foul play. Unfortunately, since the discovery and identification of the remains, there have been no major developments. Investigators officially assigned to the case have not identified a cause or manner of death, a motive, or any suspects, and the deaths of Bobby, Sherilyn, and Madison Jamieson remain a complete mystery. All right, so let's dive into this perspective, and I want to elaborate on some of the things we talked about in the episode because this is a complete mystery, and for me, the biggest head-scratcher is the abandoned truck. So let's just recap that real quick. Inside the truck, well, first off, it was locked. The keys were in the ignition, and there was a jacket, there was keys, there was the phone, and then you also had the $32,000 in cash that was hidden under the seat in that bank bag, and then also the dog, right, the family dog. And I went back and forth on this one. Again, something else that I was talking about with Shannon, and we were going over all the possible theories, and none of them completely made sense to me. Now, real quickly, though, before I get into the theories about the car, I want to address the murder-suicide scenario. I'm not going to talk about that too much. I said it in the episode. I don't believe that's what happened here, mainly because there's no weapon at the crime scene, and this couldn't be a secondary location if they killed themselves, right? That's where they would have died, and everything pertaining to them would be there as well. I don't think a bear or a deer or a raccoon is going to run off with a firearm. So to me, if it happened, it's just a really bad situation where they just got a ton of bad luck in this one and the gun got kicked away or hidden under something that just wasn't found. But that's a very unlikely scenario. So what I'm going to focus on here is the potential that this was a homicide because that's what I believe it was. So when you talk about it from that angle of this being a homicide, it does open up a lot of possibilities, and I probably will only cover 20% of them here. The first thing we have to talk about is how I got to that point, why I think this is a homicide. It's the briefcase. We know from the video that the briefcase was inside that truck. And I think whatever happened to the Jamiesons is linked back to that briefcase. Does that mean they dropped off the briefcase before and then something happened after? Does that mean that somebody saw them with the briefcase and that's what made them a target? All possibilities are on the table. But somehow, one way or another, I think that that briefcase is the key to this case. Don't ask me how, but something in my gut tells me that's the missing link here. And if we knew what was in that briefcase, we would at least know why the Jamiesons were killed and potentially who killed them. So let's run down some possible theories. First one is they go up the mountain, they look at this property, maybe they pull out the briefcase to show this property manager that they're a serious buyer. And do they hand the money over? Do they just show it off and then put it back in the car? Well, either way, at that point, the property owner could have called some people and said, hey, listen, these people are alone. They're up on the mountain and they got a lot of cash on them. And at that point, before they get back down the mountain, they're intercepted. And that could have involved one or more people. It could have involved a gun, and they could have been instructed at gunpoint to get out of the vehicle, which was locked behind them. And then the Jamiesons were brought to a secondary location, killed there, and then brought to the trail. or brought directly to the trail where they were killed. And during the search of the vehicle, maybe the offenders didn't find the money. Maybe they thought that all the money was inside the briefcase and they decided to stay as far away from that vehicle as possible because they knew if they were seen at the vehicle, it would link them back to the crime. That's one scenario. Another scenario that we have to address is the fact that maybe the quote unquote viewing of these properties was just a front. In reality, the Jamesons wanted to make it look like they were going to look at land, but they were actually going to meet someone. Now, who that person was, we may never know. But if they were involved in some malicious activity, inside that briefcase could have been drugs and or money. And maybe there was a predetermined location for the Jamesons to meet up with an individual and make that transaction. The only problem I have with this theory is that the Jamesons wouldn't have known this was going to happen to them. So they wouldn't have cleaned up their electronics or their paper trails before dying. And I would think that investigators would have found something to link this to a potential meeting with a buyer or a distributor at this point in time. And from what we know, that has never been disclosed by Beesham or anybody else for that matter. In fact, they've come out and said there's no indication of it, which to me translates into we didn't find any type of digital trail that would suggest they were having conversations about potential drug transactions or activities that could have led to their death. So although I bring it up, I will tell you it's at the very end of my list. Another possible scenario is that while they're driving up the mountain or back down the mountain, they meet someone and this person comes off as a friendly when in reality they're a foe. And again, at some point, the Jamesons make themselves a target by disclosing what they have in the briefcase or what they're in possession of or how much money they recently made. And this individual takes advantage of that, tells them to get out of the car, maybe calls for some other people. And I do truly believe that whatever happened to the Jamesons, they were transported to this location by another vehicle, which is another reason why I think there's homicide involved here. Because as Beesham said, there's no way Bobby walked those 3 miles unless he was forced to. And if that was the case, it would have been a very difficult and painful situation for him with his back. So that is possible. But again, if it happened, it was not under his own will. He was forced to do so, which again points us back to the direction of this being a homicide. And this is also part of the reason why I haven't brought up the theory of the Jamesons maybe going out for a hike on the trail and them encountering someone on the trail who kills them. Because if that were the case, the truck would have been much closer to the trail itself because Bobby couldn't walk long distances. Sure, it's possible that they were out stopping from time to time to, you know, use the restroom or let Madison get out and stretch her legs and see the area. And maybe they were making it a fun little trip for everybody. That could explain the photo. But to think that they would have gone on a family walk voluntarily, leaving their keys, their jackets, a large sum of money, and most importantly, their dog locked inside this vehicle, not happening. That's not what occurred here. I don't care what you have. Based on those details alone, that vehicle was left there because the Jamesons were forced to leave it there. By who? We don't know. And that's how I want to round out this perspective on the who. Who could have done this? And although the pool is vast, my list is relatively short. This was either someone connected to the property owner or the property owner himself. This was a drug dealer or scammer who was somehow connected to the Jamesons that we just haven't been able to identify and connect to them. This is someone who had an issue with the Jamesons and was looking for revenge. As we mentioned in the episode, they had been involved in a couple lawsuits. Were they involved in some other scams where people were looking to retaliate? Now, would it go to the extreme of killing a little girl? I don't think so, but I can't speak for everybody out there and their mental condition and what they're willing to do to prove a point. I don't know what or if the Jamesons were involved in anything that could get to that extreme. I would like to think that if they were, someone close to them would be able to disclose that information to law enforcement. But on the other hand, if it was really that bad, would these people put themselves out there and risk their own safety just to help out the Jamesons who are no longer with us? I think that's a fair question. And I think in some instances, the answer is going to be no. And lastly, we have to talk about the random stranger who has no connections to the Jamesons in any way, shape, or form. And how does that person come in contact with the Jamesons? There's a variety of ways. They could have presented themselves as a law enforcement officer, a mechanic, a tow truck driver, somebody owning land in the area, and maybe the Jamesons were already pulled over to the side of the road, or maybe they were flagged down. And either they already know that there's something in the Jamesons' vehicle that they want, or by just having a conversation with the Jamesons and the Jamesons feeling like this is someone they can trust, this person learns that they have something in the vehicle that they want and they decide to take it. And at that point, the Jamesons are forced out of their vehicle. And because they're now scared, they lock the keys inside, which doesn't allow the offender or offenders to go back inside the vehicle. And then the Jamesons are brought to a possible secondary location or to the trail where they're eventually found after the briefcase containing whatever is inside is removed from their possession. And at that point, the offender or offenders, realizing that now the Jamesons could potentially identify them, they decide to take their lives and make sure that there's no witnesses left behind. And if that's the scenario that occurred here, that could be why we have no answers after all these years. And I've talked about this in other cases. I think Amber Hagerman, I mentioned it. When you have an investigation and the potential suspect and or suspects have no previous ties to your victim, you need someone to come forward. Because without that piece of the puzzle, it's very unlikely, unless through DNA technology, that you're ever going to be able to link this offender to the crime. So we need one of you to come forward. Hopefully someone out there knows something, and maybe you just need to hear the right thing to finally come forward with that piece of the puzzle that would help solve this case. So just to recap, 44-year-old Bobby Jamieson, his 40-year-old wife Sherilyn, and their 6-year-old daughter Madison disappeared on October 8th, 2009. Their truck was found days later abandoned in the Sanboys Mountains with $32,000 in cash, personal belongings, and their dog Macy still inside. Despite an extensive search and years of investigation, no trace of the family was found until November 2013 when hunters discovered three skulls and other remains about 3 miles from the truck's location. The remains were later confirmed to be the Jamesons, but their cause and manner of death could not be determined. If you or anybody you know has information that could help in this case, please call the Latimer County Sheriff's Office at 918-465-2161. And as always, my final words go out to the friends and family of the Jamesons. I know it's been 12 years, and that's a long time to wait for justice. But as I mentioned at the top of the show with Trudy Appleby, 30 years, but now someone is being held accountable for what they did to her. And I want you to look at that situation and keep hope here, because although it's been a long time, there's no statute of limitations on murder. And all it takes is for one person to have the courage to come forward and just give us that little bit of information we need to take us over the finish line. And we're one call away from that. And I'm hoping that sooner than later, we get what we need to finally find the answers to what happened to the Jamesons, because they deserve it. And most importantly, the people that are still here, they deserve it. And I hope we can give it to them. Until that day comes, everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you soon.
Moro Casino. Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.